Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDilney. I'm here with Ben Hunter.
Hi.
And we are both very excited to be sitting across from Peggy Frew.
Hi.
Who is here today to talk about her new book, Islands.
Thank you for having me.
If you were someone who just wanted into a bookshop and it was your bookshop and this person is looking at this gorgeous cover art on the shelf and tossing it up, how would you sort of pitch this book at them?
Ooh. Well, if I worked in a bookshop, I'd be much better at pitching books than I am.
That's really our job. You write it. Yeah, we sell it.
I'm asking for tips.
What would I say? I find this so hard. I would probably actually read that little I'm turning away from the microphone. What Christina Olsen had to say about it, because she describes it as a portrait of youth and family disintegration.
More like that.
Told with piercing insight and tenderness, which I would want to read that book.
That's a good cover quote.
I'm very interested in youth, books about youth. I'm interested in dysfunctional families, and I want it to be to have depth, the story to have depth, not just to be dramatic or Does that make sense?
Yeah,
look, 100%.
And this book, like Hope Farm before it, which got you onto the Stella shortlist, looks at the sort of facets of complicated and traumatic childhood from both the child and the parent through different lenses. What is it that sort of draws you to want to tell that story?
I think with all of my writing, I always draw on my own lived emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And so I start with real feelings that I've had, whether they be from my own childhood or later now as an adult and as a parent. And so I just try and keep that kernel of what that feeling was, but then I obviously amplify it and dramatize it and build a story out of it. So I've actually had a very fortunate experience myself of being a safe and loved, having a safe and loved childhood, and my experience of parenthood has also been very straightforward and functional. But I think even within the most privileged and functional of lives, there's always a few things that you feel go wrong, or you're not hitting the mark as a parent, or insecurities that you have as a child. And so I suppose I'm really interested in those, and then I tap into my own experiences as those as a child and as a parent. Yeah, and this is thinking about Hope Farm and Islands in the writing of both those books. And then I sort of give those experiences to my characters and then put them in a scenario that just ramps up the difficulty of the... Yeah, so... But I think it's just what I've always been interested in. I've always been interested in that sort of liminal space between childhood and adulthood, and then how I just think that that affects who you are for the rest of your life, and we all kind of go back to that in our relationships and the ways that we handle all kinds of things. I reckon you can sort of see the 10-year-old in everybody in certain contexts. So
those are our formative years.
Yeah, that's right.
No, go on.
was there any particular spark where you had your first idea for this book?
Well, it actually had its kind of genesis in my practice novel that I wrote when I was really young and that never saw the light of day, for good reason. You know, it shouldn't ever be published. But so I started writing that kind of in my really early 20s and wrote it throughout my 20s without ever realizing that it even was a novel. You know, it was just sort of a piece of writing that got longer and longer, and it was a very private project, and I didn't have any plans for it or idea that I didn't even think I'd become a writer. And then it went away, and I ended up writing House of Sticks, my first novel, and getting that published, and then Hope Farm. And then when I'd finished Hope Farm, I kind of thought, I still think I'd like to return to that story that I wrote about the girl and the family house at the island. And I mean, it was very different, that first book, from what Islands ended up being. And it's not like I dragged out the manuscript and I didn't even look at it once, but the idea is the imagery was still there and that character.
It was asking to be written.
June, yeah. And it was, but this time I had 20 years worth of experience plus becoming an adult myself. So I felt like I had this whole other layer that I could add, which was the experience of the adults and the parents in the story. So, So the starting point was, in a way, revisiting something that I've always it's really imagery, you know. I always start with a mood or a feeling, and it really is that sort of. And I think this is something just so many Australians would relate to, is those beach holidays as a child. It's really physical, you know, the heat of the sand and the water and the playing in the. Like the tea tree scrub that's bordering the beach, and how that seems like a whole world to you when you're really young. But then also holidays for families are sometimes it's where things happen in families. I don't know, maybe this has just been my experience. But, you know, it's not always fun and it's not always great. And sometimes I think, particularly when there's tensions in a marriage, the holidays when these things can really bubble to the surface, when the sort of scaffolding of normal life is taken down. And so, that sense of being 10 or 11 years old and kind of being in this place that as a child you really love and it's really magical and you're really deeply connected to, but then at the edges of your vision are these glimpses of something going wrong in the world of the adults that are sort of there on the periphery. Mm. Yeah. So that was the kind of kernel that I went back to that I'd had in that earlier manuscript.
Mm. I want to touch on that a little bit more. There's a very deep sense of Australianness in your writing, which is adorable and brilliant. And at the same time, you're looking at these, I find the kind of our culture, the way we talk about the Australian family is either a perfectly idealized, or the Australian childhood is this perfectly idealized thing, or it's if we talk about a marriage or a childhood gone wrong, it is incredibly hyperbolized.
Right.
So you sort of see that in our culture, and then your book doesn't sort of sit in either of those spheres. It looks to this sort of middle ground. And I feel like there's this brilliant space that's been waiting to be explored, particularly in our own experience, and you've gone in there. Do you sort of recognise that as...
Oh, well, that's really exciting that you pointed that out, because that had never occurred to me before, because I don't think I'm not a strategic person in general, but I'm certainly not strategic in terms of what a reader's going to want to read about. You know, what should this book be about? What's a sort of hot topic that's never... I kind of think that if I tried to do that, I'd probably write a really bad book. But so it really is my – I just work with what comes to me, really. And that is really interesting that I guess I am really interested and always have been in middle ground, like you said, which
kind of
that sounds terrible, doesn't it? But grey areas in the experience and in relationships, you know, like I think I really, with Islands, I really wanted to write about relationships, about the messiness of relationships and how within relationships, actually there's a whole lot that goes on in relationships, and I think I wanted to do my best to not oversimplify, which is, you know, of course you always do have to reduce things when you're writing, you know, when you can only sort of, there's only a certain number of words that you're building the portrait of the characters with. But I wanted to write about relationships that had, you know, where there is a connection, but it's a murky one, you know, where sometimes a relationship between, for instance, a parent and a child can be difficult, but also loving, you know. So I wanted to sort of write about both and how these things coexist and how At certain times in your life, you may really notice one thing a lot more than another. You know, the tensions might be right up there, or the connection might feel stronger. The love might feel stronger at another time. But because to me, that's what real relationships are. And so I suppose I wanted to sort of construct a portrait of a family that had room for all those ambiguities and side by side.
Yeah, and being able to shift perspective between the four pillars of this family and give yourself distance. You feel like that's an important part of this, is that you're not sort of thrust into one perspective only.
I mean, I think that's how the book had to be written. I think it had to be told from multiple perspectives. But I didn't. I actually, to tell the truth, when I first started writing it, and I started writing it from the multiple viewpoints, it was actually sort of out of a reluctance to commit to one voice, because I think I'd finished Hope Farm and I just thought, oh, I just can't, you know, saddle myself with another novel again. It's so big and heavy. And so I thought I'll just lighten it by writing little bits that sort of just one after the other. I can, you know, keep starting again and get that sense of a fresh start over and over again, so I don't feel weighed down by this, you know, kind of monolith of a narrative that just, you know, I'm kind of tied to this one voice and this one perspective. But I did eventually realise that it wasn't, I mean, it probably was laziness to begin with, but it also was the way that the story wanted to be told. You know, it's about a family. There's always different stories within a family.
Yeah, you can't capture that, those little subtleties and nuances, unless you're looking at it from multiple angles.
Yeah. Well, you can, but it would be a different book, totally different book. You know, I mean, there's certainly one voice can have nuance, you know, definitely, and you can introduce the idea of the same events being experienced by different people. But it just, I guess it just felt right for this book.
You said something earlier that really interested me, which was that when you were writing this first verse, early version of Islands, you never had considered being a writer.
Mm.
How does the journey from being someone who's compelled to write but not thinking about being a writer to becoming a writer, how does that happen?
I actually think it was about confidence. It was just I lacked so much confidence all through my adolescence, and you know, it's funny. I think during my 20s, I didn't like lose sleep over it, but I would often look back on that time in my life and think, oh, what a waste that was, that I was so miserable and I wasn't able to sort of, you know, I felt like a bit of an outsider as a teenager and into my 20s as well, actually. But looking back, so I would look back not that long afterwards. I would look back and feel like this was a tragedy and that, you know, if only I'd had more confidence. But now, looking back from, you know, now being in my early 40s, I look back and think I'm grateful because I read books. Like, books were my world, and I don't think I would have become a writer if I hadn't have had that refuge, you know, from hiding, from being sociable and going to parties and all the things that, you know, I sort of might have thought I was missing out. I now don't think I was missing out. But, and I think that I became a musician pretty much straight out of coming out of high school, and I think that, you know, music and writing aren't worlds apart in that they're both a creative pursuit, and you don't make much money from either of them. But it was easy for me because I wasn't like becoming a singer-songwriter or something. I was becoming a member of a group, and I wasn't driving it, and it was a really safe environment for me to be creative but to feel like I wasn't exposed particularly. And so I think that that worked for my level of confidence then. And then, but the writing was always there. I just didn't know, you know, that I could get published, basically. I mean, I wrote stories, and I was a great letter writer, and then later when email started, I would write long emails that were sort of like letter, you know, in a letter form. And I obviously needed to express myself through writing. And then I just think I got a bit of feedback. Like I did, well, I got sick of doing all these menial jobs to support myself as a musician. And so, and some people I knew were doing this course in Melbourne at RMIT called Professional Writing and Editing. And I just, you know, I had all this writing lying around. So I thought, oh, I'll just apply and see what happens. And I got in because, you know, you had to send a sample of writing. It wasn't just, you had to actually get pass it, an assessment to get in. And that was a little bit of a boost. And then, you know, then I did the classes and then
just being accepted.
Yeah, getting into it. Someone saying you're eligible. Your writing's of a good enough standard. I mean, looking back, I don't know how high their standards were, but there are some great writers have done that course. And the teachers were excellent. And then getting feedback from teachers in the class, you know, and other students, and then sending out short stories and getting kind of like commended in a couple of competitions. And then one of my stories won a competition that doesn't exist anymore that the Age newspaper ran. And then publishers were interested. And then I think it was just, it just worked for me in that it was a slow build up to bolstering up my confidence to the point where I felt ready to put my writing out there. And yeah.
Do you now see yourself as an author first and musician second, or are they just completely different worlds?
They're actually not that different. I mean, well, the main difference is that one's collaborative and the other one's not, although writing does get collaborative once you start editing a book. Really is a collaboration. I do see myself as an author first, and I'm very grateful that my bandmates haven't kicked me out because I'm the person who can never remember how to play the songs at band practice. But they've all got busy lives as well. I mean, one of them's a lawyer, and they're all very busy. And so they probably, I don't know whether they think of themselves as other things before they think of them, you know, as a lawyer or something more than they are a musician. I guess that's the nice thing about that, like, so much has changed in the world of music since we haven't put an album out for more than 10 years and we haven't done any touring for that long. And, you know, the whole streaming sort of culture has started the whole industry has completely changed, and the way that people make money has changed, which is, you know, you can see all these bands are doing comebacks because they don't sell CDs anymore. They have to actually hit the road to make some money. But I guess one upside to the way that the industry has changed is that there's sort of room for you, for a band to kind of do what we did, which was just really slowly put together an album over 5 years, take our time, and then, you know, we are going to release it on a record label, but, you know, you can just put a single out and you can sort of, it just feels less pressured and structured than it used to, if that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah. So it can kind of exist as a thing that's not everybody's main job, which is actually a wonderful thing.
We're sort of running out of time, but before we wrap up, I would just like to ask if there's one sort of thing that you really hope people take away from Islands, what would it be?
I think it would be that they would go away feeling that they really knew these characters, and also that they had been inside a world that felt alive to them and that they could go back to in their memory the way that you do a place that you visited in real life, because to me that's what all my favourite books feel like. They feel like a world that I went to and it's still there if I ever want to go back, you know.
That's so well put. And the book does also have a read it and love it guarantee on the cover, so I think that speaks.
It's well earned.
Yeah, it's well earned. Peggy, thanks so much for coming in talking to us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a real honour to have you here. And, I think it's going to be very special and look forward to selling lots of it.
Great. We're very excited. And podcast listeners, you can get all of Peggy's books, including her upcoming book, Islands, at Booktopia.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.